This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations, to comment upon a rumor. The rumor is based on talk about loose nukes or the makings of loose nukes in Ukraine. Yes, the history says that Ukraine in the late 20th century, following the end of the Soviet Union, voluntarily gave up its nuclear weapons. Ukraine is a engineering center all through the Soviet Union, building rockets and bombs and missiles and war machines, gave up its nuclear weapons at the end of the 20th century. However, we do know that during the course of this nearly 100-day conflict, there has been threats to nuclear reactors in Ukraine. Chernobyl, certainly, because the Russians occupied it for a time. Zaporizhia, the large complex that might have been a target or an accidental target of Russian bombardment, is now in the hands of the Russian forces. All this leads to a remark by the Director General Rafael Grossi of the IAEA, that's the nuclear watchdog for the United Nations, usually in the news about North Korea or Iran. In this case, Ukraine is unhappy that Grossi has not come to inspect the facilities that are at risk, either in Russian hands or targeted by Russians or possibly in Russian missile striking range. Mr. Grossi made a remark talking about this conversation with Ukraine, and it's an ambivalent remark, but it points to a concern. Mr. Grossi said, "We hope to go there," meaning to Zaporizhia or Ukraine, "to prevent either there is a problem or we end up finding out that a few hundred kilograms of weapons-grade material going missing. This is what keeps us awake at night at the moment. It is a situation that needs to be prevented." All right, Mr. Grossi is concerned that there might be weapons-grade material in Ukraine. At the same time, quite separately, we have talk, and it's being repeated in Russian media, we have talk that Ukraine has fissile material, whether it's the several hundred kilograms Mr. Grossi's talking about or whether it's something else, we don't know. But the talk is a rumor, and it would serve the purposes of a lot of bad actors for this talk to be taken as sober fact. For example, it can look like a Russian disinformation campaign to accuse Ukraine of preparing a weapon of mass destruction. It can look like a Ukrainian effort to warn Russia not to get too close. If you can threaten nuclear weapons, which Mr. Putin has several times in the last 3 months, we can threaten nuclear weapons with a rumor. Professor, I've ended all of my remarks because I'm going nowhere but in circles, but that's the point of disinformation. It makes you pause. Let us say that there is nothing to worry about except they're now talking about fissile material as if it's a weapon, even if it doesn't exist. They're talking this way. What does this tell us about where this war is going and where we are in the early 21st century, thinking that the Cold War is behind us? Good evening to you.
Good evening, sir. I think, first of all, it tells us that it's not some singularity of your brain that causes it to go in circles on this issue, but rather the fact that there is a tremendous amount of contradictory thinking about nuclear weapons has never really been worked out. And now we're in this very ironic position. Remember that Russia has between 5,000 and 7,000 nuclear weapons, which are deployed or deployable. They have at various times had everything from nuclear landmines, the use of which I cannot imagine, to every size of rocket and all the rest. And we in America, although we, with the assistance of seven German or European Jews. They're basically the ones who did it, and Hitler sent them to us very kindly, except for Mr. Oppenheimer. We are the ones that invented the nuclear bomb. We're also the first ones to use it, but we're very fastidious now about the idea that it shouldn't proliferate, that the way to control nuclear danger is to limit the number of weapons. Now, in the case of the Ukraine-Russian war, we have an example of why this is not necessarily the right way to think about it. Ukraine had over 1,000 nuclear weapons in 1991, and that was because where Soviet Union made their weapons. They gave them all up, as far as we can tell. But remember, Ukraine is bigger than France. And I ask you, could you conceal nuclear weapons in New York City if you were able, of course you could. So it's very hard to find these things. But if in 1994 we had not pressed Ukraine quite so hard and said, look, you can keep 50. If the Ukrainians had 3 months ago 50 deliverable nuclear weapons, we would not have any war now, because Putin would have been deterred. But because we disarmed Ukraine, we made Ukraine an attractive target. And this shows an inconsistency, an illogic in American policy on so-called non-proliferation, to which I'll return. But I'd also like to make this point, that however this war ends, there is going to be a large wave of nuclear proliferation afterward, because as the example I just gave shows, it would have been better for Ukraine to have had nuclear weapons 3 months ago than not to have had them. If she had had them, she wouldn't have Russians all over her now, because the Russians would have been too scared to go in. Other countries can figure out that logic. And if you look at the number of countries that are on the threshold, I would just mention a few: Sweden, Germany, Poland, Turkey, Iran, Japan, South Korea, Taiwan, and there are others about which we have questions. I expect that the post-Ukrainian world, post-Ukrainian war world, if it exists, is going to be one in which there are far more nuclear powers than there are now. And this may not be a bad thing, because, for instance, if South Korea had nuclear weapons, then she wouldn't have to worry so much about North Korea. But our approach to South Korea is absolute no. You cannot have nuclear weapons. Our approach to North Korea is we won't recognize you unless you give up nuclear weapons. North Koreans are never going to give up nuclear weapons. We should stop dreaming. We have to deal with the reality, and the reality is that North Korea has to be deterred. Likewise, the reality is that Russia now has to be deterred.
And in deterring, given this rumor in Ukraine, the question of escalation comes immediately to mind, Professor. We've talked about this over the weeks of the war. We're watching better and bigger and more lethal weapon systems arriving in Ukraine, and we're watching the Russians reinforce and resupply close to their border in Donbass and recruit more and more experienced soldiers, bringing back their veterans. We're watching reports from London that the Russians are making advances. Admittedly, it's not poking into Kyiv and taking over the country in 72 hours, but it is a sizable advance over these last weeks of Russian disorder. And escalation suggests that NATO has much more it can do, including putting in NATO troops. Now, does that raise again the nuclear card, or are we going to play this out as if, though we all have nuclear weapons, we're not going to use them? Can you tell?
Well, there's something we call nuclear blackmail, which Japan worries about particularly, which is Japan doesn't want to have nuclear weapons. But if China comes over and says, look, Japan, we've been trying to take various islands and territories of yours. We've been trying to get you to do this and that. And we've even used military operations where your troops, your subs have been able to sink our ships and stuff, and we're tired of it. So here's the word. Either you concede our demands or we're going to nuke you. And at that point, the Japanese say, well, what are we going to do? And knowing the Japanese, I would say they're not going to say, okay, we accept the demands. As one Japanese official was quoted as saying, don't underestimate us. He was saying this to the Chinese. If necessary, we can make 1,000,000 H-bombs overnight. Japan is right at the threshold, and in fact, it creates a dangerous situation that they don't already have a minimal nuclear deterrent. So I think the answer to your question is right, that escalation, first identified by Clausewitz in 1832, has turned out to be a very, very reliable feature of wars. American thinking about this is full of self-contradiction, and what it's led to, essentially, is not enough deterrence. As I mentioned, I think, last time we spoke, if 3 months ago we had lined up for Putin to see all of the weapons and all of the troops and all of the advanced systems and so forth that we were going to deploy to help Ukraine, he would have said, oh, my God, I don't want to go up against that. And he probably would have been deterred. But because we have been escalating at this sort of millimeter an hour speed, the full force of deterrence has never been felt. Now, no less a mind than Henry Kissinger pointed out that in negotiations and escalation and so forth, what you do is you give them your very best offer, you give them your most violent response immediately, so that it will they will feel the full force of it, they'll understand that they're not going to change it, and that it has to be an up or down decision. What the Biden administration has adopted is a kind of a drip-feed attitude to Ukraine. And what this has done, quite contrary to the intentions of the administration, is to lead to an astonishing degree of escalation, something that they would never have imagined.
Professor H.J. Mackinder, international relations, commenting on a rumor about loose nukes in some fashion, either in Ukraine or in the hands of bad actors in Ukraine or outside of Ukraine. We don't know, but it's in talk and it's in reports, and we don't know its origin.
Could I add that if it's in reports, given the lag, if we're now worried about fissile material, what that tells me is that the Ukrainians are probably trying to figure out what color to paint the casing of the bomb. This is not difficult to do, and I suspect we're going to hear a lot more about this issue, and it is one that we don't have a way of thinking about.
One more detail, Professor, when we come back. I'm going to ask you your measure of new opinion in Europe, not in America, that the Russian attack on Ukraine and the pounding that Ukraine has taken over these last nearly 100 days reintroduces us to the world of Thomas Hobbes that we believed we'd left behind us in the 20th century. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.